The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So in cultivating interpersonal capacities, this theme for the week, before we ask the question, who are you? We ask the venerated question, who am I? We don't often ask that because our autobiography seems too familiar to even pose it. But who am I? That question has a long spiritual history, right? And for paying attention, every answer we might give feels at least a little wrong. Somehow inadequate or inauthentic, not quite like a note, a mental note that doesn't quite nail it. Yeah, like when we are noting, you know, phenomena, and it's like, oh, that's not quite what that is. That's how self feels. And in the alienation, we have our answer. That the self feels like a kind of ill-fitting Christmas sweater. little belly showing, or, you know, So who am I? Before the mind reaches for an answer, it stops and creates some sense of wonder, space, very alive, but less encumbered by words. And as Dharma practitioners, we can enjoy becoming mysterious to ourselves, even though that feels disorienting. And one of the kind of strange effects of meditation practice is that we both know our conditioning more clearly and fully, and yet our autobiography becomes deeply uncompelling. In a way, we've stopped reading the story of me. That's just not how we relate to life so much. And it's not that we dispute memory, future, or something. It's just that every story we tell about the self feels a million miles away from the heart. And those moments when the kind of egoic ground shakes, when we realize we've not been standing on something so solid, comes in the form of feedback or something, when the egoic ground is challenged, those moments scare us, but they can delight us. We can actually learn to live with fewer reference points. So in Buddhist psychology, part of how we explore ourselves is to perceive the subtle habits and assumptions that shape our view. And we have surface layer habits, assumptions, but also latent tendencies, storehouse consciousness, sometimes described as. And these latent tendencies, these deeper assumptions that shape the perception of self and other, these tendencies are dormant, a kind of like karmic grooves that do not manifest except in the context of very particular triggers. And even though these habit energies don't fully manifest all the time, they constrain us. They are not freedom. They are tension. These tendencies constrain the places we can venture emotionally. And as practitioners, we're expanding the places we can go in our psyche, you know? We're expanding the places we can go so that we can meet the changing conditions of life with fluidity and ease. Sometimes this phenomenon is described, these latent tendencies are described as the deposit of experience in cognitive, emotional, and perceptual schemas. The deposit, you know, I almost imagine like you know, the buildup of some substance in a water filtration system or something like that is a deposits in cognitive, emotional, and perceptual schemas. And these are the forces before the obvious clinging, the energies and intentions that shape our perception. And I bring this up because some of those latent tendencies seem only to emerge in interpersonal realms. That's why we can feel free, maybe in many spheres of our life, but stuck there. And so we vow to practice with what gets evoked to see how our mind shapes the perception of self and other. And our mind, you know, the default position is maintaining fidelity to stories about who the other person is, who they are to me, who I am. And it's like, okay, fair enough. But to get loose of some of those stories, to begin to see the assumptions we're making, we practice not knowing. Not knowing is most intimate, the Zen tradition says. Not knowing is most intimate. In our interpersonal life, how we know ourselves, how we know another person, is we're dancing between knowing and not knowing. Christian contemplative Simone Weil said, "I am also other than what I imagine myself to be. To know this is forgiveness." The child or parent or partner or whatever it may be, they are also other than what we imagine them to be. To know that is forgiveness. In our knowing and our certainty, it's only in that that we treat others with and ourselves with harshness. And so we double back into some measure of not knowing, maybe familiar with the experience happens usually with those we care about most, love most, and over the years we become so familiar with them, and at some point we stop looking at them, and they become so encrusted in concept, too much knowing. The concepts feel so thick, they can kind of disappear behind those layers, concepts. And after some years or decades or whatever, you might look at them and just silently ask, like, who are you really? Because we're animals and vulnerable and dependent on many conditions, we try to make everything predictable. It's a very deep habit of mind. Like, so much of the machinery of our mind is dedicated to not being startled. But love is startling. Other people are startling. Unless we are confining them into a matrix of predictability, the being of another, our own being, is much more open than we imagine. The psychoanalyst Stephen Mitchell says, we learn to love in the context of the contrived and necessary safety of early childhood. And love seeks perpetually a kind of safety that screens out the unknown. But in human relationships, safety and predictability are difficult to come by. We endlessly strive to reestablish that illusory sense of permanence and predictability. When patients complain of lifeless relationships, it's often possible to show them how precious the deadness is to them, how it's carefully maintained and insisted upon. Love, by its very nature, is not secure. We keep wanting to make it so. With our escalating dependence on others, we try to make them predictable too and routinize connection. And that's understandable, but we do not want to lose touch with the not knowing. We connect with that kind of risk and the openness, the unpredictability of love and care and life and another's being. Because when we are relating to another as concept, when they're buried behind the layers of our story, we sacrifice intimacy, spontaneity. In other words, in imposing a certain kind of predictability, we're orchestrating a kind of flatness. And I'm sympathetic to this. It's like, how much anicca can we take? Right? It's not adaptive to only ever be focused on groundlessness. We do need some measure of predictability in our interpersonal life, for sure. But we want to be careful because that same predictability can muffle the wildness of caring about another person. It is possible to ignore the fullness of their experience. And we get into these highly choreographed routines with each other where we play our role with great fidelity. And we know the other only in we kind of freeze them. We know them as their role in relation to us. We freeze the child or parent or spouse or whatever. We freeze them into their role. We confuse their role in our life with who they are, but they are only ever that in relation to you, in relation to everyone else. They are something and someone else. And sometimes we might glance, I might glance at someone I love, and maybe they don't even see me seeing them. They're just actually alone in their consciousness. And there's something powerful in considering their being standing completely apart from me. So can we know how the deep habits of our mind shape our view? Can we relax into not knowing? So maybe we pay some attention to this. The next 23 hours. Putting down what's known, opening with some wonder. Offer that for consideration. Wish you all a very good day. Look forward to being together tomorrow.